The first chapter of the book of Genesis, beginning at verse 1. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth was a formless void, and darkness covered the face of the deep, while a wind from God swept over the face of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness God called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. And God said, "Let there be a dome in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters." So God made the dome and separated the waters that were under the dome from the waters that were above the dome. And it was so. God called the dome sky, and there was evening, and there was morning, the second day. And God said, "Let the waters under the sky be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the waters that were gathered together God called seas. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let the earth put forth vegetation, plants yielding seed and fruit seeds of every kind on earth that bear fruit with the seed in it." And it was so. The earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed of every kind, and trees of every kind bearing fruit with the seed in it. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning, the third day. And God said, "Let there be lights in the dome of the sky to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years, and let them be lights in the dome of the sky to give light upon the earth." And it was so. God made the two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night, and the stars. God set them in the dome of the sky to give light upon the earth, to rule over the day and over the night, and to separate the light from darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning, the fourth day. And God said, "Let the waters bring forth swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the dome of the sky." So God created the great sea monsters and every living creature that moves of every kind, with which the waters swarm, and every winged bird of every kind. And God saw that it was good. God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters in the seas, and let birds multiply on the earth." And there was evening and there was morning, the fifth day. And God said, "Let the earth bring forth living creatures of every kind, cattle and creeping things and wild animals of the earth of every kind." And it was so. God made the wild animals of the earth of every kind, and the cattle of every kind, and everything that creeps upon the ground of every kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let us make humankind in our image, according to our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the wild animals of the earth, and upon every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth." So God created humankind in God's image, and in the image of God, God created them. Male and female, God created them. God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air and over every living thing that moves upon the earth." God said, "See, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food. And to every beast of the earth and to every bird of the air and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food." And it was so. God saw everything that God had made, and indeed, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished in all their multitude, and on the seventh day, God finished the work that God had done, and God rested on the seventh day from all the work that God had done. So God blessed the seventh day and hallowed it, because on it, God rested from the work that God had done in creation. This is the word of the Lord. When I was on sabbatical in 2008, I traveled to South Africa and stayed with my dear friends Milan and Marlies Nell. The Nells are worshiping with us for a month or two while they are back in Princeton for study leave at the seminary. A highlight of the trip to South Africa was a visit to the Kruger National Park. The goal of a visitor to the park hoping to see wildlife is to find the big five: lion, leopard, rhinoceros, elephant, and buffalo. The Nells made a booking for me for a nighttime guided ride out into the park with a dozen or so other tourists in an open-air Jeep kind of thing. It lasted a couple hours as darkness fell. Two guides, flashlight, headlight, slowly driving on dirt roads, far from the paved public access roads. 2 hours, beautiful moonlight, no animals. We didn't see one animal. The next day, we piled into Milan's car for what Kathy and I used to describe to our kids as a car hike. Driving all through the park, along the paved roads with other cars weaving through the park, and by the end of that several hour hike, car hike, we had seen all of the Big Five and a whole lot more of the animals of God's creation. The truth is that Milan and Marlies, they always saw the animals before I did. Well, other than the elephant herd crossing the road that was hard to miss. The stunning birds up in the tree, the lion to see through the trees, the rhino in the water with nothing showing but its snout, the baby elephant being hidden and protected by the grown-ups. They had the eyes, the expectation, the experience of being a witness to the beauty of God's creation. And they helped me to see, hear, and experience that beauty. They gifted me with a glimpse of the awe and wonder of God's creation. That's how we ought to read Genesis 1. Side by side with those who have the eyes, the expectations, the experience, even the longing for the beauty of God's creation. Reading the 7 days of creation in a community of God's people, longing for the awe and the wonder of the very goodness of all that God has done. Reading Genesis 1 together with awe and wonder. Reading Genesis 1 together, as Jesus would say, with ears to hear. Folks read Genesis 1 in all kinds of ways, for all kinds of reasons. But what if you and I, we read Genesis 1 together to sort of press the reset button on the awe and wonder place in our soul? The awe and wonder for all that God has done. Like the forebearers of our faith, who wanted to turn from the worship of many gods and the plethora of idols and offer a witness to the one God of all creation, the one God who made heaven and earth, the same God who gives breath to all humankind. Genesis 1, it's a kind of palate cleanser, allowing you to rinse from drinking from the world's fire hose of idolatry and chaos and darkness and destruction, a kind of refreshment for the sacred imagination. Taking in the beauty of God's creation where the light rose out of the darkness, once again pondering all that good of God's creation and receiving it with awe and wonder, the promise and the knowledge that you too have been created in the image of God. And like all creation, you belong to God and you are precious in God's sight. God saw everything that God had made, and indeed it was very good. Years ago, I invited Professor Paul Roram to give about 20 of my colleagues from around the country a tour of some of the religious art in the Princeton University Museum. Dr. Roram is a frequent leader of adult education here at the church, is a retired professor of European church history from the seminary. Looking at a piece of stunning artwork with Paul Roram is sort of like driving through the Kruger Park with the Nels. He would point out details in the art that the unexpected, inexperienced eye could so easily miss, sometimes with a laser pointer pointing at a large piece of art up on the wall, other times with his pinky finger standing next to a small painting and pointing out the smallest of detail. After several of those experiences with Dr. Roram over the years, I've observed his practice of allowing, inviting the community of observers around him to take time with a piece of art and not rush. And Paul always asked the group to look not just at the beauty of the art, but to search for the theological takeaway of the art. He would step away from the piece and allow the group standing together to search for the theological symbolism, to note the smallest of details and ponder what the artist was saying about God, God's promise, and the place of God's people in that promise. Reading Genesis 1 together and pondering what it says about God, God's promise, and the place of God's people in that promise. God the artist, sculpting a creation that reflects God's own goodness. Humankind created in God's image, in God's likeness, blessed by God to fill and rule the earth. Good, 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 good. Even before God stepped back to rest on the seventh day, God saw everything that God had made. Indeed, it was very good. Very good indeed. I made a rookie mistake this week at lunch with Nate Stuckey. I told him my sermon title for this morning was very good, and he asked me, what was very good? I knew right away it was a trap question and I was going to blow it. Well, I said it comes after God created humankind. Nate rose up in his chair and leaned across the table at me. His face was equal parts shock, dismay, and then the disappointment in his pastor. That's the big mistake everyone makes, he said, with passion. Very good is not just a reference to humankind. God saw everything, everything, everything God made, and indeed it was very good. That's one mistake I won't repeat again, I promise. And here's where we take a few steps back from the art, the work of art, and ponder. Everything God made was very good, everything, very good. Humankind created in God's image, God's likeness, on day six, God bringing the children of God into the family business. Humankind blessed by God and entrusted with creation to be godlike in relationship to the very goodness of creation, to be in relationship to creation in a way that reflects the Creator and the Creator's goodness, to somehow rule the very good earth in a godlike way, rule like God rules. And as we stand here together, taking a few steps back, however, there are words that still leap off the canvas of the text. Subdue, dominion. Perhaps the frailty of language is what also comes into view as well, because the words seem inconsistent with our theological learnings, because words like subdue and dominion cannot be softened or explained away in the Hebrew. Scholars point out in Hebrew, the connotations are even stronger and actually not very nice. Perhaps the words fail us in trying to ponder not just the artistry and beauty of God, the very good of God, but also fail us as we try to ponder humankind in relationship to God and to that God-like relationship to creation. Words not just coming up short in terms of theological imagination, but words foreshadowing and perhaps in the history of interpretation, even contributing in some way to the harm humankind has done and continues to do to God's very good creation. Words that land more like scars in the artwork, or better said, a lasting echo that ought to sound like a trumpet's call to humankind to be more godlike when it comes to God's creation. Reading Genesis 1 together, not just in awe and wonder, but in lament as well, pondering the theological takeaways of the art that tells of God creating, of human beings being created in the image of God, of humanity's relationship to all that God has created, very good indeed. Reading Genesis 1 together and sparking our collective sacred imagination, pushing the reset button for our soul when it comes to awe and wonder and lament. Awe and wonder and lament. It sounds like a book title by Anne Lamott, but it also sounds a lot like what it means to be a child of God, living in between death and resurrection. It sounds like what it means to be the disciple of Jesus Christ pretty much every day. Awe and wonder and lament all mashed up. And still morning comes after the evening. Light still shines in the dark. Good, 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 very good. And you and I, we cling to, proclaim, and dare to believe the impossible, the resurrection promise that darkness shall never, ever, ever conquer the light. And so we come to the table this morning. It is the risen Christ who invites us. We take this bread and this juice. We take the elements of God's good creation. And we feast on Christ and his life, death, and resurrection. We are nurtured here at this table by the impossible. For the God of creation is the same God who authored salvation in and through Jesus Christ. And by God's grace and in God's love, claimed us as God's own beloved children, God's new creation. If anyone who is in Christ, the Apostle Paul writes, anyone who is in Christ, there is a new creation. Everything old has passed away. See, everything has become new. All this is from God who reconciled us to God's self through Christ and has given us the ministry of reconciliation. So we are ambassadors for Christ, God making God's appeal through us. God blessing humankind and entrusting us to reflect God's very goodness. By God's grace and in the power of the Spirit to dare to be, in the power of the Spirit to dare to be Godlike in our relationship with all that God has done. Yes, impossible. But remember what the angel Gabriel said to Mary. Nothing will be impossible with God. Good, 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 good. Very good. Indeed. Thanks be to God.